Have you ever met someone who has so much luminosity that when they walk into a room, they don't just light it up, they fill it with joy? My guest today on Take It From the Top, veteran Broadway actor Andre Ward, is one of those people. Andre's megawatt smile, his infectious laugh, and his knack for telling a juicy story, not to mention his singing and dancing, have put him on every casting director's must-have list for nearly two decades. The stage and the world gets a whole lot brighter when Andre shows up. Since coming to New York in the late 90s, Andre has performed steadily on Broadway, landing featured roles in the original companies of The Producers, Saturday Night Fever, and Rock of Ages. In the quirky hit Xanadu, Andre had the distinct honor of having played every single role, both male and female, during the show's run. And if you're in New York City before the end of 2016, be sure to catch Andre singing and tapping his heart out as Minstrel in the hit comedy Something Rotten. You'll be glad you did. Andre joins me today by phone from his home in New York City. Let's find out what makes Andre tick and how his preparedness, his kindness, and yes, his luminosity have taken him to the top. Andre Ward, thank you for joining me today. You know I'm a big fan, and I can't wait to speak to you today.
I'm excited.
Well, let's get going. When you were a kid, Andre Ward, what was your favorite book?
My favorite book? The book that sticks out to me for some reason in my head is, when I was in high school, actually, I think I was 14, 15, I read the book Alive about the soccer players that got stuck in the Andes. And had to eat each other. Yeah, I know. Terrible. But it was such a powerful reading experience for me. And I think I read it while I was listening to classical music. And so it like really set the scene. And for whatever reason, I always remember that book. And it's the thing that sort of spurred me on to read more and more and more and more. Because when I was growing up, I was a child of a teen mom, and I was, you know, the only child for a while, and the TV was my best friend. And so I grew up watching a lot of television. I got lost in television. And so it wasn't until I was a little bit older that I really fell in love with reading.
Where did Alive lead you? What was the progression there? I'm really curious.
Alive was a lot about triumph over the extreme adversity. For me, it has been through my perseverance that my joy ultimately comes. I was just saying to a friend of mine the other day who was having a tough time, I just said, you know, it was said to me and it's really helped me. You know, there's people say, you know, things always work out in the end. And so if they haven't worked out, then it's not the end.
That goes on my little list of wise sayings. You mentioned being a child of a teen mom. Tell me a little bit about how things began for Andre Ward.
Well, I grew up in Las Vegas, my mom was a preacher's kid, and she was 17 when I was born. And I was this little kid who I went to this little Catholic day. I was born Pentecostal, preacher's family, but then they sent me to Catholic school, and I was in a Catholic daycare, my family didn't discover I could really sing until a little bit later, but I used to sing You Light Up My Life for the housekeepers at my day school when I was, when everybody else would be out for recess. I wouldn't go, and I would stay inside, and while the housekeepers were vacuuming the room, I would sing You Light Up My Life for them, because that was the big hit back in the day. And once when I was in my room growing up, my grandmother heard me making up a song, and she realized I could sing, and she made me sing at church that next Sunday, the song that I had made up in my room. And from that moment on, I started singing. She made me join the choir, even though I didn't want to join. I was a little shy, and so through tears, she sat with me through my first choir rehearsal, but then I then started singing. And then in the fourth grade, I talked a lot. And Sister Regina Wojcinski, I will never forget her name, told my grandfather, who was my playground director at my school, said, Andre's a lovely student, very smart. He talks a lot. Let's get him something to work out some of this energy, which was this little children's theater company called Rainbow Company. And he took me to classes at the Rainbow Company to work out some of my excess energy so I would stop talking so much in class.
Little did they know. Sister Regina Rajinsky, is that correct?
Yes, yes.
First of all, let's just have a moment of silence for that incredibly fabulous name. And then that she had the insight, you know, that you needed to do something to get to help with this excess energy.
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah.
I'm forever grateful. Forever grateful.
Exactly. So most people I speak to, there was a moment when they go, oh, this is what I'll be doing, or this is what I want to do. Did you experience that then or later?
I was a child insomniac, and I stayed up late at night, and I used to write soap operas in the middle of the night, and I would come to the playground the next day, and I would make kids in my class act out these soap operas for me, and I would like pretend that we were doing camera blocking, and I would have them hit marks, and it was, you know, and then I would like plot and see how I could get these soap operas produced on public television. It was, you know, I was nine, but so TV always fascinated me because it was the thing I grew up doing. And it wasn't until I think I started with Rainbow Company and I was this, you know, little boy we had to just make up scenes that I was like, oh, you can do this on stage. And then when I started high school and I did my first ever musical in high school, and I realized, oh, this is something people really do. This is something people make a living doing. Because my family, my extended family made gospel albums. I grew up singing in church. And, but I didn't know I could make a living doing musicals and singing and dancing. And I think the thing that I fell in love with for the first time, we did this in Las Vegas. They used to do these, I don't know if they still do them, they do these all-city productions where everybody from every high school in Las Vegas auditioned for one production. And a chorus line was the production that year. It was my sophomore year of high school.
Oh, wow. Yeah.
And I got the role of Richie. And it was such a phenomenal experience for me. I met friends who I'm still friends with to this day. And it was the thing that made me go, oh my gosh, I love this. I didn't even know I could dance until I did that show. And the head of the dance department for UNLV, University of Nevada, Las Vegas, saw me in that show and offered me a scholarship to dance at the university after she saw me in that production. And that's when I started dancing.
What was the next step? Did you just start classes or what?
I started classes at the university, and nobody in the university knew that I wasn't a university student. Everybody thought that I was just a university student. And
you were still in high school. I just put that together.
So I had a scholarship to dance there for the next 2 years. And then I got a scholarship. All this sort of stuff is sort of happenstance. In my mind at the time, was just sort of happenstance. Nevada and Utah had their thespian conferences, which are the, you know, the drama, big drama conferences. They had them together the year that I graduated for high school. Mm-hmm. And I auditioned for the thespian scholarship and I got it. And all of these colleges that wouldn't have normally seen me saw me. And I got a 4-year tuition waiver to go to Weber State University, which is the college I went to.
Wow.
So I basically got to go to school for free. And after I had gone to private school my entire growing up, it was a no-brainer to sort of take that burden off my family to be able to go to college and not pay a dime and be able to study musical theater.
The part that hooks in for me is that, you know, you looked at it as an opportunity in a way to sort of also pay back your family for the education you'd already gotten.
They had made such a huge sacrifice. Mm.
You said Weber College, right?
Weber. It's W-E-B-E-R. It's a little college. It's about 30 minutes north of Salt Lake City. And I had never been to Utah, really. And it was such a beautiful, beautiful, wonderful experience for me. I still have friends, my best friend from college, David Spangenthal. We basically moved to New York about the same time, and we're still friends to this day. You know, it's so remarkable when, you know, you stay in touch with people and you see them grow and change and living a life that he's always meant to live, you know, raising beautiful children and having a beautiful partner. It's really glorious.
It is. Is there anything that specifically you feel like you brought away from there? I mean, you talked about your best friend. That's certainly nothing to dismiss at all. That's incredible. That right there is worth the price of admission. But what else might you have brought from Weber College with you?
Well, my experience, my professor there, Jim Christian was his name, is his name. He's still with us. He just retired. Instilled a really huge work ethic and kindness and generosity and respect. And work hard, and be kind and be generous, because that will always pay off. Work hard, show up prepared, and work hard. And that's what I came to New York with. And I came to New York with not knowing how hard it was going to be or how hard it should have been, which was sort of a lovely thing. I just knew that I had to come and work hard. Just work hard and show up and keep showing up. And there's going to be a lot of no's, but eventually there'll be a yes.
When you get a no, which we all get no's, you know, in this business, whatever part of the business you're in, it's sort of like, that happened again. What moves you past that?
It's so funny because it's so changed over the years. I think when I was younger, I used to take no a little more personally.
Mm-hmm.
And now, if I have come to something and I have come doing everything I could have done and as prepared as I could have been, and I have left everything in the room to the best of my abilities, and I hear no, I hear that it wasn't for me. And that I don't hear I wasn't good enough. I hear, oh, that wasn't for me, and there's something else that is for me. I think the best advice I ever got was someone said to me, Andre, if you are as prepared as you can be and you've done the best that you can do and you go out for a job and you get it, then that was your job to have. And if you don't get it, then it wasn't your job to have, because if it's yours, there's nothing you can do wrong. And if it's not yours, there's nothing you can do right.
That is good stuff. I look at your CV and my goodness, you've been working on Broadway for over, 16, 17 years now, you know. That is not shabby. That is excellent. That says to me many things, not only about showing up, kindness, and being prepared, but talent. So what is the thing that when you kind of like, oh, God, another audition, what gets you going?
That's a really great question, because I pray a lot. I was raised very, very religious, and now consider myself very spiritual. And I was just saying to the universe the other day, I was like, you know, please let me remain open. Let me remain open to whatever opportunities present themselves, and let me see them, oh God, oh universe. Because sometimes when you hear no a lot, I can start to feel jaded or like, what am I doing? Or I'm like hitting my head against a wall. And I've been in those places where it's like, oh, it's time to change, or it's time to turn, it's time to look another way. You know, I started out in the business as a dancer. Not that I'm still dancing. I'm doing something a lot, and I'm tap dancing every day. But utilizing other parts of myself, and it's always been about remaining open to those things that I didn't always know were there. You know, starting off as a dancer, one of my first huge jobs was Ragtime. I did Dreamgirls. I did Ragtime on my first big, like, national tours and big productions. And, you know, Ragtime's certainly a very serious piece.
Mm-hmm.
And then I began to realize, I was like, oh, I have other gifts, too, to share. Mm-hmm. The gift of laughter, And it's just about remaining open. When I did Xanadu, I remember it was one of those big moments for me where I was like, oh my goodness. Because I was always a person who was like in the green room telling stories and making people laugh, or people laughing at my stories. And then when I did Xanadu, it was a way where I was like, oh my goodness, I can bring joy and laughter to people in this way as well on stage. Producers was most definitely, that was probably the moment. The audition for the producers was the moment where I thought, oh my goodness, I have not seen that I actually have a gift, a gift for bringing laughter to the world.
Just speaking as a friend, you bring that into the room with you. You bring an incredible energy and light into the room. The minute you walk in, it's like, yay, Andre's here. And so, you know, the lucky people in the audience who now get to see that on a regular basis, to me, that's what's sort of wonderful and miraculous about the universe we live in.
If I can get out of my own way, then I can allow the universe to do its work. And that, I just, like, you literally just brought that to my head. If I can step out of my way and let the universe do its work, then I will show up the best of my abilities for the life that God has for me.
Andre, how do you get out of your own way?
Oof. I will say, showing up is half the battle, because I have definitely had times in my life where I have not had the courage to show up. And showing up and sitting through discomfort or moving through discomfort has been the most instructive way for me to get out of my own way. Because when I was younger, I tended to think that I had to always feel great. And that meant that I was doing the best and that I was, you know, really like hitting it on all cylinders. And sometimes it's moving through and being uncomfortable that gets me to the next level, that gets me to that point of inspiration. Because I believe that inspiration and joy doesn't always come from feeling amazing. You know, discomfort is sometimes very instructive and can lead you to doing some of your best work, some of my best work. I can only speak for me. You know, you don't always have to feel uncomfortable, but I have definitely seen that about my pushing myself through my discomfort.
Tell me what that's like, because there's some people who just won't go past that. They stop the minute there's resistance.
Yes.
So tell me, as someone who's moved through that a number of times, what's the progression and what's possible when you do go through your discomfort?
When I move through my discomfort, what I have found that there are more things possible than I ever imagined. When I did Xanadu, I remember when we first started the show, I wasn't an understudy. And then when we got into rehearsal, they were like, oh, okay, there are going to be two understudies for Sonny, the lead guy. The original lead broke his leg in three places 2 hours or 3 hours before we were supposed to have a performance the week before we opened.
Wow.
And for one reason or the other, they're like, Andre, you need to go on tonight. I never considered myself a leading man. I had never considered myself that. And Chris Ashley, such a beautiful director, just said, Andre, can you do this, or will you do this? You need to do this tonight, and we're going to rehearse. You're going to have 90 minutes of rehearsal. You can even carry a book. And I remember, I don't want to carry the book. I was like, no, it's I can do this. And that was a huge moment of discomfort. I had never, been a leading man on stage on Broadway before, and played a love story, comedic or otherwise, on stage and on a Broadway stage. And when it happened, it was a beautiful experience. All I did was pray to be of service. Let me be of service. Let me be of service, because Carrie Butler's work in that show was so brilliant. I was like, let me be of service to her. Let me be of service to the other people in this cast, because I love that cast so much. And, you know, and it started and it ended. Nobody died.
Right.
The show went on. It never stopped. And I learned that I could do more than I ever thought I could do. I could do more than I ever thought I could do. And I was more than I thought I was. And again, it was sort of like, show up, move through the discomfort. It's just about doing the best that I can do, because, you know, I can only be what I can be. And that's another thing that's come for me with age. When I was younger, I didn't have a clear sense of who I was. And as I get older, I have a clearer and clearer sense of who I am. Mm-hmm. And so being the best that I can be and not doing an amazing imitation of someone else is proved to be invaluable.
If you were to say,
mm-hmm.
who is Andre today?
Ooh. I would say, I was just thinking about this too, because there was between Rock of Ages and Something Rotten,
mm-hmm.
I worked, but I wasn't working on Broadway. I had, you know, mm-hmm. done some TV guest spots and regional productions. But I remember thinking, because I'd worked for so long, Rock of Ages was 6 years,
right,
for the most
right.
part. And I was like, I learned that I am not what I do. And for so many performers, for so many creative people, the line between who you are and what you do is so enmeshed that when what you do seemingly isn't there, then who are you? So for mm-hmm. me, it was about unpacking who I am without this this thing called Broadway.
Right.
And for me, I found out that I am still a loving friend, brother, son, partner, a great spiritual force in the world that has love to give. And I think my younger self didn't know. And I would tell that to my younger self coming up in the business,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
that your strength will come in knowing that no matter what happens, no matter how many no's you get, that you are enough. Who you are, just as you are, born, you are enough. You are loved, you are love, and you are enough. That has been the biggest revelation to me as I have grown up in this business, is the more I learn that I'm enough, the better my life is, no matter what job I have.
If anything were possible, what would be the next thing for you, Andre Ward?
Oh, it's funny. Right when you said it, something came to mind, and then I want to like take it back. It's been the thing that has been the most daunting to me. The thing that people have asked me to do. That I've been most scared about doing. Ooh, it's hard to be honest about that, because once you're honest about it, but once you put it into the universe,
right,
stuff has a way of happening.
I know. What do you want to have happen?
You know, I said it in the earlier part of this thing. I was that person that was in the green room telling stories, making people laugh. I am a storyteller, and I have come to not shy away from that. In my regular life, knowing that I'm a storyteller and I like doing characters. So creating, I don't know what kind of show it is. I don't know what kind of vehicle it is, but really, really sitting with myself and creating, if anything was possible, creating some sort of show where I get to tell stories and play characters and make people laugh, think, would be that thing that I would do if anything was possible. And if I could get out of my own way. Mm-hmm. Isn't it funny how things come around?
Oh, my goodness. Yes, it is. It is. Well, I have to tell you, I would be one of the first people to buy tickets for that. I would love to see that. Let's hold space for that to happen, because I think the world needs more Andre Ward, for sure.
Oh, my goodness.
It's just true. Listen, what is one of your proudest moments, Andre?
Ooh, you know, it's funny. You know, I just always go with the first thing that comes to my head, because I just think I just talked about it. I had just come through a particularly hard time, and I had gone in for the producers, you know, sort of on a whim. And I just remember, I remember going to the audition. I remember people saying, you know, Andre, you know, they ask you to tell a joke in that audition. And I remember, oh, well, I don't have jokes. I don't know. I don't have a joke. And they're like, well, if you get called back, they're going to ask you to tell a joke. And I was like, well, I'll think of something. And I remember, I went into the room and it was really lovely. I sang and Susan Stroman just said to me, she said, Andre, you know, do you have a joke? And I said, well, no, I don't have a joke, but what I do have is an observation, and I launched into some story of mine that I had. And it was one of those things where I felt like the universe, my preparation, the universe had all been moving me forward. And it wasn't a moment that was on stage or that was in the public eye or anything. It was just one of those sort of like, oh, this is an inspired moment for me.
Yeah.
You know, and I remember it was lovely, because I was like, oh my goodness, I need to remember, Andre, you can make people laugh. You can make people laugh. And that was like, to make Susan Stroman laugh was really beautiful for me.
What for you is success?
I used to think success came from, you know, the outside, and I realized that success is an inside job, because I have, you know, I've had lots of material things and had, you know, a certain amount of dollars in the bank and not been so happy. And, and then I've had not a lot and felt very, very contented. And so I've realized that, and the other way around. And I realized that success for me is an inside job, and it doesn't have to always do with, if I am well in my work, if I am truly, truly happy with what I'm doing, and I'm providing service outside of my work and helping others, then that's really successful.
That's great. And I want you to know I meant that. The world needs more Andre Ward, and I'm going to be looking for your show, my friend.
Thank you.
And I want to thank you so much for talking with me today.
Thank you, Dana, for asking me. I so appreciate it.
Side effects from listening to Take It From the Top include climbing out of a creative rut, getting inspired, and or living the life of your dreams. If these symptoms persist, tell a friend to download the podcast immediately.